Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to the Corbett Report. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in July of 2025 with a conversation about one of the most secretive and powerful organizations in the entire globalist construct. Am I talking about Bilderberg? Am I talking about the Freemasons, the Council of 300? No. I'm talking about the UK Met Office. You know the UK Met Office, the recipients of the Dino Award from the 8th Annual Fake News Awards for their non-existent weather stations. And the loser is... the UK Met Office! For literally making up 103 fake temperature stations and reporting 30-year averages from those non-existent sites. That's right. As originally reported by Ray Sanders and followed up in a series of extensive reports by the Daily Skeptic, the UK's National Weather and Climate Service has been involved in a massive, ongoing scheme to control the future by controlling the past, creating data for 103 of their 302 weather stations that seemingly don't exist. The site for Dungeness, for example, provides 30-year rolling temperature averages from 1960 to 2020, but fails to disclose that the station in fact closed in 1986. Through diligent efforts and actual reporting, Sanders was able to obtain records via a Freedom of Information request that allowed him to determine which stations actually exist. Keep in mind, this is the same Met Office that lists an airport weather station that goes back to 1873, 30 years before airplanes were invented, and that keeps a record in which 80% of their listed weather stations are sited in locations that had internationally recognized uncertainties between 2 and 5 degrees Celsius, making the purported tenths of a degree of global warming in recent decades statistically meaningless. Wait, just a second. This just in, this whole story has been debunked by Science Feedback, a Meta/TikTok/IFCN/EU/Google News initiative funded fact-checker site that claims the whole inventing stations idea is fake news because, quote, certain weather stations collect decades of data, but later need to close down. Rather than letting this data go to waste, scientists are able to combine this past data with more recent data from nearby, well-correlated stations, that is, those with similar trends, to look at long-term climate trends. This is a scientific method that is published in reputable, peer-reviewed papers and is used by other organizations around the world. It is not data fabrication. End quote. But, as the Daily Skeptic notes in a detailed rebuttal that is well worth the read, the Met Office in fact goes out of its way to use adjusted, amended, modified, and likely corrupted data from inferior sites over long-term, reliable data from top-quality Class 1 sites because, A, almost all of their weather stations are listed as Class 4 or Class 5 sites, that is, junk sites with unreliable data unfit for weather reporting by the World Meteorological Organization, and B, Class 5 junk data sites are more likely to report anomalous hottest-ever temperature readings. So what does all this mean? It means don't trust the UK Met Office to tell you the weather in 2125. That's what it means. It's fake news. So here's your Dino Met Office. You earned it for the most shameless attempts at lying to the public in a field overwhelmed with people shamelessly lying to the public. Let's hope that public finally sees through your charade and completely and totally eliminates your funding forever. Yes, you remember the Met Office and their shenanigans with their fake non-existent weather stations and the dino of dishonor that they received as a result of that. And you will, of course, have followed the show notes from the Fake News Awards to the source of that information, namely Ray Sanders, who has been documenting and drilling down on this with Freedom of Information requests and other Interesting articles that he is posting up at Tall Blokes Talk Shop, which is at tallbloke.wordpress.com. The link for that and everything that we're talking about today will, of course, be in the show notes if you need to catch up on this story. But let's bring him on the program. Ray Sanders, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Thank you.
All right, let's just jump into the deep end of this. Obviously, it's an international audience. Maybe not everyone knows about the UK Met Office. Can you tell us, what is the UK Met Office? What do they do? And why are they scared of Ray Sanders?
Right, what the Met Office does, it's basically the weather forecasting organisation for the UK. And it also is responsible for keeping the climate record of the UK. It's a government department and was formerly part of the Ministry of Defence, largely because of its requirement to provide weather forecasts for the Air Force and the Navy, and also for the military in general. As such, they're a very, very secretive organisation. They've all signed the Official Secrets Act, and they've got a mentality that everything that they do is about themselves. They're not a very open organisation, simple as that.
You know, I guess it makes sense when you frame it in that context, the Ministry of Defense and providing, you know, meteorological reports for the Air Force and things. I can understand that, certainly in a war context, etc. But this is the 21st century. One would think that reporting the weather would not be such a top secret sort of thing. But from the responses or lack of responses you're getting for your Freedom of Information requests, it would seem the opposite. Why is that?
It's not so much the weather forecasting, and it's not so much even very, very recent weather. That we'll come to that in a separate issue. It's more a case of what they've done for the long-term history of the system, keeping a record of how the climate has allegedly changed or not, whatever you want to look at it. Up until about the 1980s, it was a very neutral organisation because the whole subject of climate change was more concerned with whether we were going to get an ice age or not at that time. Around about the 80s, 90s, various things started coming in and they seemed to be somewhat politicised. The IPCC came about, things like that, and they seemed to be trying to produce evidence to support a theory rather than simply just recording data, as simple as that. There seemed to be a motivation created to not necessarily 100% accurately represent the temperature as it was. Simple as that.
All right. So tell us about your own journey in all of this. How and why did you get started and interested in the subject? And what has happened to you as a result of this?
Right. Basically, I've got a scientific background, an engineering background. So I've always had an interest in it. When my children started going to secondary school, they seemed to be teaching, and I was helping them with their homework and things like that. They seemed to be taught things that didn't seem right to the way I knew things. They were taught things about climate. And when I was with a group of young people of that age, I asked them, well, how come it's winter in January? These people are like 16 years old. They couldn't actually answer that question. They could give me great detailed knowledge about the effects of climate change and what burning fossil fuels is going to do. But a really basic thing like what determines whether it's winter or summer, they just hadn't been taught. It got a little bit deeper in a list of greenhouse gases. This is 1 to 10 from the IPCC, didn't include the number one gas. It had a little footnote at the bottom saying water vapor was excluded. Silly little things like that start to trigger your mind thinking, what the hell are they doing here? I started then looking out how they were recording data. This sort of triggered this whole process on. And that's when I started noticing things just weren't quite right. But I'm one of those guys, I suppose, who sits behind the telly and wants to throw a brick at it when the BBC comes on, that sort of thing. And so I wasn't doing anything. And then suddenly, it's a really roundabout story, I'll be as quick as possible, but my son had designed an extension on his house that he'd bought, and he's only in his mid-20s. It's quite an achievement to have bought a house, let alone be able to expand on it sort of thing. Everything he'd done perfectly. He'd even had a commendation because it's a, what we call a listed building. It's a very old house, and so he had to do it in a certain way. It came along that a building control inspector, who says, is this right, is that right, wasn't going to say it's all okay, not because it wasn't going to fall down or not because the electrics were unsafe, because it didn't meet the insulation requirement decreed by the Climate Change Act. And although it was 10 times better than the building that it was stuck on, he wasn't going to sign it off. And we ended up with this ridiculous fight. And I thought, whoa, this has got to stop. This is insanity. This is not the way it goes. So I figured out, well, how can I, rather than just throw a brick at the television and get annoyed, how can I direct what I'm doing in a way, I'm not going to sound so wonderfully famous, but Winston Churchill, you always used to say, you go for the soft underbelly infrastructure. So I figured, yeah, okay, let's go right back to the root data from where they're making all these wonderful claims. And that was just the weather records. So then I started looking at those, saw lots and lots of problems, lots and lots of anomalies. And that's when I started thinking, how am I going to do this? Tall Blokes Talk Shop, I'd noticed on there, had got this service stations project going, which had stopped back in about 2015. I thought, well, I'll resurrect it and see what goes from there. Simple as that.
All right. So tell us about some of the things that you have found as a result of that.
First thing started, I thought, well, I'm going to review every single weather station. Started looking at lists of weather stations. Wait a minute, where's that one? Now, I know you reviewed this earlier, Dungeness, we call it. There's a soft G, by the way. You said Dungeness, if I remember right. Sorry about that. It's quite an important place. There's a nuclear power station there. I've worked there. I thought, there isn't a weather station there. So I drove my car, went there, had a look, couldn't find it. They said there was one in a place called Folkestone, not far from where I live. Went there, couldn't find it. Dover, no, couldn't find it. That's when I thought, how come I'm not finding these places? So I sent them an email and said, where are they? And they basically said, well, why do you want to know? And I said, because I want to find them, sort of thing. And then started hitting this wall all the time of asking them for something. And the inquiries, the normal option, won't answer you. So you have to go down this crazy line of doing Freedom of Information requests. I'd already sent one to find out what the Commission for Instrumentation of Meteorological Observations, CIMO guide was, which categorizes the quality standard of weather stations. So I got familiar with the process. I then asked them, well, you tell me all these stations, which ones of these are actually open and actually exist? And eventually they sent me back a list of 103 stations that simply weren't there, which is quite remarkable because there's only 302 on the list. More than a third of them didn't actually exist. So I said, okay, why are you doing that? They then gave this long highfalutin process that stations open, stations close. So they want to keep the data record going. Fine. I can understand that. They say they use data from other well-correlated stations to make up this model. Obviously, it's always computer model. It's never real figures. To come up with what the weather would be there if the station had closed. So I said, fine, that's great as well. Okay, you're saying that's peer-reviewed. So what are the stations you're using? And then you just hit a total you will not know. Now, this is absolutely crazy because some of the stations that they say they positively state as open on their own websites are also on the closed list as closed, which is very strange. And they are also making up, even to this month now, to today, details of the temperature, average daily temperature in those places by the month. This place is called Lowestoft, Newton, Rigg, Nairn, and Paisley in Scotland. And they're producing by the month. So I said to them, well, what are the stations that you're producing now? Not historical ones. What are the ones you're going to use tomorrow or yesterday? And they refute. That's when I hit, totally, you're asking too many questions we are not going to answer. I've asked other questions on totally unrelated subjects, like, why have you put into your archive records temperature readings which didn't occur, which you said were expunged? Why expunging means get rid of them. You don't put them into the record. That just shouldn't happen. But that's exactly what they're doing. They've told me that they don't transfer data from one station to another, or rather the term is unmodified data. Mm-hmm. I've proven that at sites called Waddington and Wattisham, and there are others, by the way, Charter Hall is another one, that they have done exactly that. At Wattisham, which is a place in Essex, they picked data from a place called Wethersfield, which is about 25 miles away. It's not as if it's close by. And they have just implanted it straight onto the records. Why would you do that? Because it's only a bit of history. Leave it blank. They had actually left the record for Wattisham blank for a while, when the station was closed for being, it's an airfield station, so when the runway was being relayed, they didn't put in the data. Why would you be bothered about putting in data when none was taken? It's only history. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you haven't got any data, then so what? Why deliberately transfer somebody else's? There's a reason. There's lots of other things that I've asked relating to other issues, which are distorting effects on weather stations. But it's this this whole history rewriting that seems to be very peculiar, and they point blank refuse to discuss.
Right, exactly. Okay, so let's drill down on that, because as you say, one could understand you want an historical record of weather in this area, yeah, and this particular station closes, but you've got other well-correlated stations, so you can kind of keep one could understand that if someone was being above board and on the level with all of this and putting the calculations out there and have the little asterisk to note, well, this station is closed, but we're correlating from these stations. I don't think people who would have a problem with that. But as you say, all this secrecy of you can't know how we're doing this, and the sausage is just coming out of the factory and you cannot see into the factory, it obviously means something is going on. As you say, all of the other fidgeting and changes of the historical record that they're making, there must be a reason for this. Let's pull it out for people. Why would they be interested in changing this record?
Well, there's a political motive. I think I'll be blunt as to say that. In the last two or three days, the Met Office has just brought out its latest state of the climate thing for last year. It's full of such preposterous nonsense that you can't believe calling themselves a scientist would say that large parts of the east of England will be underwater in 25 years' time, right? That's what they're saying. 2050, half of the country is going to be underwater, sort of thing. Well, it's not. I guarantee you it's not, because I know that, because 25 years ago, in fact, in 1975, when we were all being scared to death, a tutor actually stood in front of us and a whole lot of students and said, the world's going to run out of oil by the year 2000. And everybody went, oh. And he actually turned around and said, if you're that gullible to believe me saying that, you've got to start thinking again. And he then went on to a whole load of critical thinking exercises. Mm. But what is happening now is they've been politicized to scare the living daylights out of people. We give storms, and if it's a slight little bit of a blow now, we give it a name. We get named storms. Well, apparently, we've just had our third heat wave of the summer in the UK. I'd love to have seen it, because I actually live in probably the hottest part of the country, and we haven't had three heat waves. Trust me on that one. But they've given a new definition to a heat wave, so they can say, oh, we've had one because it reached this temperature, which is not even that scary. If you were to speak to somebody from the US, for instance, the 28 degrees, which is, about 80 Fahrenheit, is classed as a heat wave, they'd laugh at you. I mean, really, wouldn't you? I mean, a Texan would think that was nothing. But that's what they're doing over here. They seem to be wanting to scare people. It's that sort of power control by putting fear into people, and we can then provide the solution if you do this. It's all much very control. And you can see that that's what they're doing with the data to get to an end point that they want, to make it look as if we're all going to burn to death tomorrow or drown.
Yes. Again, for people who have a hard time wrapping their minds around this, I have talked about this in a lot of different contexts. For example, the IPCC Exposed. I've talked about what is the average global temperature, just talking about that question, because people think they go out with a thermometer and measure the temperature and that's it, and they just calculate an average. Nope. It is a calculation that they make from all sorts of mathematical gobbledygook. And I did a report on Orwell's Nightmare, talking about this phenomenon of, in the U.S. context, as well as the global data temperature sets, cooling the past and warming the present in order to create the bigger trend line to fit the narrative. Of course, the narrative is the world is on fire, and the only thing we can do about it is give more power to the politicians to save us from it. Tithe more to the United Nations, and it will all come out well in the end. Obviously, that is a politically motivated lie. I think you're doing incredible work in exposing this. And the craziest part about this is, I mean, you're just a retired engineer who has some time on your hands to be able to look at this data and point out that the emperor is having no clothes. And yet it seems like they're a little bit scared of you and what you're doing and are actively trying to stop you from doing it. Tell us about some of the pushback that you've had.
Well, as you know, it's historical way before my time. Roger, who originally set up the talk shop, did have his home raided by the police. Six police officers turning up at your house. Must be pretty scary experience. He doesn't talk about it to us, but, you know, that's really weird, isn't it? Somebody's released some information about the weather and you've suddenly got police officers rocking up at your door. The weird experience that I had when I'd asked for certain amounts of data, and I think they mistakenly sent me something that they didn't want me to know. I looked at this email and I thought, this is a bit strange. I can't remember exactly what happened. I got called away or something. But went back to the computer a few hours later. I was completely frozen out of my own email address, right, which seemed really quite weird. And I didn't really understand why. I got onto my internet service provider, or email provider, AOL, and they were very, very helpful. They were based in Ireland. It was quite amusing because I could hardly understand the Czech accent. but he spent about an hour. And then at the end of it, he managed to recreate and gain access simply because my son had a separate associated email address. He dumped everything over to that and then put everything back into mine except one email. And he said, I can't get that one over. He said, this one is what has infected your system quite deliberately. He said, it's a very, very, very old style of program. He said, no modern hacker would be using that. I don't know why anybody's used it. I said, well, where did it come from? He said, I'm not at liberty to tell you that. I can tell you between the times it came and the time after when it's been clear, but I'm really not going to tell you because it'd be more than my job's worth, basically, is what he said. I deduced from it that I know from my own experience that that was from a government agency, shall we say, and it loused up lots of information that I already had. They couldn't pull everything back in. And to this day, I'm convinced, you can call me paranoid, yes, so what. It did take out a lot of information. I do wonder if there was something in there that they'd said to me. Curiously enough, it wasn't the first time that something had come from. I'd had some correspondence about a year or so before from somebody, a member of the Royal Meteorological Society, which is a different organisation. And it was pretty innocuous, but they admitted afterwards that they shouldn't really have said what they said to me because they sarcastically made a joke about using their car thermometers being more accurate than this particular weather station. And I don't think they were meant to make that sort of joke because they were basically denigrating some of the stations that I'd been investigating. So I do feel that people, that's just one side. You know, cause as I say, you can call me paranoid. It's this way they refuse now. I am vexatious. They won't answer because I asked them a question. They won't answer. So, or they'll answer a different question to what I asked. So I say, no, I don't want to know that. For example, I asked where the lowest off station was. They replied by, here is its data. I said, no, I didn't want to know its data. I wanted to know where it was. And they'll play the silly game that you ask a question, they'll answer something else. They'll deflect to somewhere else. They've even said to me, when I asked just what the CMO rating, the quality rating of one depot, one particular weather station, NITIS said, they said, we will tell you if you tell us why you want to know, which is quite crazy. It's a bit like a Volkswagen saying, now, you want to buy this car? We're not going to tell you what its emissions are unless you tell us why you want to know. Is that crazy? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, that just not answering questions, deflecting, don't want to know you.
So has it reached the point where they literally will not respond to your freedom of information?
Yes. Yeah. Well, not, yeah, they stopped. Their normal inquiries route has point blank stopped. So I had to go to freedom of information. And they have now said, we will not answer your questions. You are vexatious. You are annulled. The crazy thing about this is, under this particular type of freedom of information request, you can do it anonymously. So they've obviously aggregated my case, obviously because I've been honest, but I could have just asked by 10 different email addresses or got 10 other people to have done it.
So, well, you know. Well, here's actually, I think, in a weird way, although you are being stonewalled at this point and they're stopping you, in a weird way, I think this is actually an inspiring story because, again, it's the story of just one man, one retired engineer who has the time and ability to sit down and actually look at this data and to provoke such a response. And look, I'm a Canadian in Japan who is watching, you know, with bated breath this interaction with the UK Met Office, because I think this does go to the heart of the scientific/political rot that is corrupting so much internationally of the information and data that we're receiving. And I think it is important. And yes, if there is one Ray Sanders out there doing this, then yes, they will be able to say, oh, he's a vexatious, he's just a pest, we don't have to talk to him. If there's 100, if there were 1,000 people in the UK who were all interested in this data, 10,000, could you imagine how much more difficult it would be to simply whisk them all away? So I think there's a genuine sense that if people just followed this model of what you're doing, I think we could really make some progress in prying out this data and showing to the public that this is how the sausage is being made and you don't want to see it because it's not pretty.
Yeah. This may surprise you. One of the chaps who's associated with the project has got a MP to raise a ministerial question on this. This guy's got a knighthood, you know, and he's a member of parliament, and he got blanked as well. So you tell me how that's working. I mean, I think it's Sir Julian, and I can't remember his name now. It might have been Mills. I can't remember it now. He has asked the Minister of State, Peter Kyle, for the Department of Science, Information and Technology to answer this. I put a long letter querying this to them over a year ago now, and they've never even replied to that, and they even stonewalled an MP's question. He's still pursuing that, by the way. So let's see.
As he should, and as I think more people pursuing this issue. My point isn't that I believe that the Met Office is going to come out and say, oh, okay, we were fudging all the numbers. Here it is. I don't think they'll ever get to that point. But the point is that the more that we ring the alarm about what is going on here, and the more people who hear that alarm, the fewer people will believe this nonsense that is being thrust into their face, and people are being asked to eat it up. Oh, it's the hottest summer that's ever happened in the history of humanity. Trust us, Double Scout's honor. We just won't tell you, you know, where we're getting this data from. No, we will not accept that anymore. And I think it's the example of people like yourself doing this work that will shine the light for other people to do this. So if there are other people out there who are interested in pursuing this, specifically in the UK, obviously with the Met Office, but maybe even internationally with their own national or regional offices, what advice would you give to those people?
Well, it would be nice. See, what I'm trying to do is through the Tall Blokes Talk Shop and the Surface Station project is to analyse all the stations, because we've got to look squeaky clean. We've got to do this perfectly so that we can then say, these stations are good. We will then use the data, the original raw hard numbers, to reconstruct the data, the historic climate record. If it's the same as the Met Office's, then that's fine, isn't it? After all, why would they be arguing with me? But if we can show, and we've got to be absolutely spot on perfect, and that's what we're doing. Tall Blokes Talk Shop is freely available. You can, as you've highlighted there, I do include my own personal email address. Please don't hack me. But you can always get in touch with us through the talk shop. If we could be a focus for attention, and by the way, lots and lots of people very kindly do go out. They take photographs from me. I've had I won't give his name. Well, he goes under the name of Highfast. He's actually a US Air Force retired jet fighter pilot and a member of the American Climatological Society. He's actually put a post in there for us explaining things in great detail. Anybody wants to contact us, we will listen, put it that way, and it will be a great help. And it doesn't matter where in the world, as I say, we have people from Latvia, the States, Japan, all around the world. So anybody wants to contact me, please do. It'd be greatly appreciated.
Excellent, exciting, as I say, inspiring in a way. I think that this is the people's effort that will show things. And yes, exactly right. The science is surely reproducible. So if you can independently reproduce the exact results that the UK Met Office has, great. You know, science wins. Yay. But if there is a discrepancy, then we'll have to adjudicate that in, you know, some sort of peer review process or something along those lines, right? Well, we'll see. We'll see how they react to that. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I really don't think. I actually think the only way this will be addressed in the end is a bit like has happened in the United States and hopefully may happen here, is that you've got a political change at the top, which states, well, we just can't afford to keep doing this nonsense because it's very expensive what's happening. I live in a country with the most expensive electricity of any developed nation. I mean, that's crazy. We've got people in this country who are frightened to put their heating on because we're sitting on seas of oil and masses of gas, but we're not allowed to use it because somebody has decided, and so it goes on. And there's a huge amount of propaganda going on out there that complete untruths that, for instance, our price of our electricity is set by the price of gas, which is quite ridiculous because sometimes the price of our wholesale price of electricity goes negative. How did, you know, and we're still burning gas. So how does that work? You know, this whole climate thing is driving so much else and it's driving us into impoverishment. So unless we get a major political change right at the top, I can't see anything else will do that. Perhaps I don't want to make this political, but perhaps if people can be shown that the data is being corrupted, then that will make them doubt those political people who have supported that view. That's the easiest way of putting it.
This is my view. I think we always put the cart before the horse with political action. Politicians love to get out in front of a parade and pretend they're leading it. So we have to be the parade, and some politician will come along and say, oh, yes, yes, I'm on your side. Anyway, I think we'll leave it there. Ray Sanders, incredibly important information. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and I hope we get to talk again in the near future.
Lovely. Thank you for having me. Cheers.
Thank you.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett, Reportage, Essays on the New World Order, available where books are sold, until they're not.
ReportageBook.com.